Okay, recorders on. This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have Mr. Jeffrey R. Nyquist on the line again. Second stage of our discussion. Jeffrey can be found on the net at jrnyquist.blog. And of course, Jeffrey's a rather accomplished, extremely articulate, and extremely knowledgeable historian and international affairs expert, and of course, with a very, very strong obsession with Cold War period of the United States and Russia. Okay, Jeff, back to what we were discussing. I'm really fascinated by this topic because what we're talking about, because you're basically admitting, and I'm admitting it too, that history is so complex. These tribal rivalries are complex. Everybody's kind of intertwined and interconnected. And we don't really know what the hell's going on, right? And as time passes, you kind of lose sight of these connections. And you were just admitting that the Roman Empire was, you know, it undermined, as Gibbon said, by Christianity. And we're suffering the same effects. It basically, Christianity is, hey, look at these brutal people. You know, they're not educated, they're not too smart, they're not too skilled, they're simple people, they're farmers, and we're the city folk, we have more education, and we need to be tolerant of others, right? Tolerance. Isn't that
well, a new religion comes in, and the new religion isn't tolerant.
It isn't, it's not tolerance.
No, it's not.
But they say it's tolerance. They say it is.
Well, yeah, of course.
Right.
Christianity was not tolerant of the old religion, and the socialists, although they say they're tolerant, they're not tolerant.
They're not tolerant, yeah.
They're not tolerant of the old religion. They are eager to impose their, you know, whenever you have a change in cosmology and worldview,
mm-hmm.
in your religion, you're going to have this change. And this is what, you know, I'm giving you the overview of mm-hmm. what is really in the big picture, what has been happening here
mm-hmm.
With us. This is really what's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
We are transitioning, apparently, from a Christendom
mm-hmm.
To socialism.
Yeah, that's what's happening, yes.
A socialist world in which the view is materialism.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that
correct.
Man is only a physical being, mm-hmm. that the brain is that physical matter is primary.
Mm-hmm.
In mind is epiphenomenal.
It's all material. It's all material.
Under
right?
Christianity mm-hmm. and paganism, remember, mind is primary and matter is epiphenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You go back to Aristotle's cave, you talk about, Plato's cave and Aristotle's metaphysics.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mind is primary.
Yes.
And matter, the material world, you know, as Aristotle says, the unmoved mover, who is mind, created, set all
mm-hmm.
Cause and effect, the material world, into motion.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as he proved, as Aristotle suggested, you can't have an infinite chain of cause and effect going backwards through material time
mm-hmm.
because that's impossible. You can't have such an infinity.
Now this.
So you have to have a beginning. You have to have an unmoved mover who is not material,
okay.
but is mind.
Jeff,
right?
Can I interrupt and just say that
sure.
the new religion is not tolerant of bourgeoisie life? Is that correct, do you think?
Well, new religion is socialism. So
yeah, I mean, but the socialists are not, they're not going to allow the bourgeoisie to flourish.
Well, they
you think that's correct?
The new, well, we don't know what the final form of socialism is going to be.
No, we don't. But isn't that the trend? Isn't that the trend?
According to Marxism, no, you're not going to have a bourgeoisie. Therefore, overthrowing the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie.
That's what I'm saying. Yes.
The dictatorship of the proletariat.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what they're aiming at.
Yeah, that's right. So it's the hostility for the bourgeoisie. You know, for example, I'm not changing the subject at all. And I went to China in the mid-90s, and I wish I'd met you earlier. You're a brilliant guy. I would have benefited from our friendship. But you know, I went across Asia in the mid 90s with my wife, and overland, and we got to China maybe you know, maybe 1996 or something like that, and in the end of 95, and I was kind of amazed by the. We spent about a month or two there traveling around on trains and buses and checking out the whole place. It was really fascinating, pretty stressful because you know it was still kind of hostile to Westerners, but you know I was looking around and I said, Tom, I looked at my wife, you know, where's the ancient China? You can't really find ancient China. It's gone. They destroyed it.
Yeah.
It's all destroyed. Gone.
Well, because they're communists.
Yeah. And you have the Tiananmen Square and the Forbidden City, and you have the Spring Palace. I can't remember where it is, not too far from Beijing. And that's about it. Everything else was destroyed. And I had a conversation with a fairly clever Chinese diplomat. I met him in Central Asia, and I mentioned this to him. And he said, well, you know, the communists destroyed the past. They wanted to rid they wanted to purge the past, the stupid, you know, Chinese history. They wanted to completely eradicate it.
Yeah, because the Chinese emperor ruled under the mandate of heaven.
Yes.
And
yes.
They have the I Ching is the mystical book for the superior man.
Yeah.
And you have Lao Tzu and the Tao Te Ching, and you have Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have Confucius with ancestor worship and you know, dealing with the ghosts of those that have come before you.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, it's all spiritualistic. It's all metaphysical. It is like the ancient Greeks and Romans. It's pagan, and it believes in a spiritual view of the world, not in a material view.
Mm-hmm.
So just as the communists have to smash Christianity and Judaism, by the way, they have to smash all spiritual views.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing in China. When communism takes over, it has to destroy the traditional religious foundations of China.
Mm-hmm.
Because they dialectical materialism is the belief that matter is the primary essence of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And mind is only epiphenomenal.
What's interesting about your comments, and I agree with you, but what's interesting is before Mao took over as a dictator, the literacy, in China was rather limited. I think it maybe less than 5% of the Chinese, believe it or not, were actually able to read and write.
Well, Mandarin is a very difficult
yeah.
language in written form.
Very, right? Very difficult. Yeah.
Very, very difficult.
And probably there's some scholars who speculate that the Mandarin language, of course, you know what Mandarins are, you know, that Mandarin language was designed deliberately to make it difficult, if not impossible, for ordinary people to master it.
Well, you could call it an intelligence test.
Yes, that's exactly
right. You had to have a certain IQ in order to actually be able to function in it.
Brilliant statement, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So it was a barrier. I mean, look, you have this notion, look, he's a peasant. Why does he need to read?
Right, exactly.
He needs to harvest rice.
Right, exactly. Right. He knows his place. But my point is that the new view of man, or, you know, humankind, is that we should be tolerant, we should be open-minded, and, you know, a black woman should be there at ambassador of the UN representing the United States, you know, who has who's descended from slaves, right? That's a good thing. But then you ask your question, what about competency, right? You know, what about that? We're all different. Some people are much more capable than others. I married a woman who's, for example, a descendant of French aristocrats, and she's extremely intelligent. You know, if I'd married an ordinary French woman whose ancestors were mostly farmers, I don't think we could probably say that about her intelligence. You see, so I don't know, Jeff. It's pretty tough. It's a pretty tough question
every society. I mean, people, you've seen the bell curve book. Every society, there's a normal curve, right? Bell curve.
Yeah.
Remember the
book? Of course. The
bell curve?
Of course. Yes.
Everybody is
Gaussian curve.
Everybody is not, you know, everybody is not born with the same gifts. Right?
Yes, yes, no question.
And you can't, there are some people that they're not going to ever be able to master certain things.
That's right, but Jeff?
Some people can't, you know, I'm never going to be a nuclear physicist.
Yeah,
right?
Right.
So, and there's, and I'm not going to be an NFL basketball player.
Right.
I wasn't born with the physical traits
right.
needed to be that. I don't have the coordination. I don't have the height, right? I'm not tall enough.
Right.
I don't have the skills. So we're human beings are built differently.
Yes, of course. But if I
right?
can, if I can direct you to one, I got to tell you, this is quite interesting. So you don't know this, but I traveled about 85, 90 countries in the world in the 90s, on and off for about 10 years, overland, mostly overland, with my wife. And so I've been everywhere, right? And after a while, you kind of get this weird feeling. You say to yourself, all right, Tom, Catherine, why are we condemned to this world where hardly anybody can read write? Hardly anybody has any knowledge of anything. You know, they're generally speaking, they're kind people. There's nothing wrong with them, right? But they're just very, very unsophisticated, and they just don't seem to aspire to anything but, you know, the daily needs, right? And that I'm talking about the whole world, except for maybe Western Europe and white, you know, Caucasian people. The whole world.
Well, but by the way, most white people, they may know to read.
Yes.
But look at what they read. They read the wrong things.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't think, they don't really have, look, the famous, what was his name? He wrote the Memoirs of a Superfluous Man, Albert J. Nock, right?
Okay.
Albert J. Nock wrote that book, and he had taught at the Ivy League. And he said, look, in that book, he said, look, everybody appears to be a human being. But he said, look, they're not.
Yeah, they're not.
The human race is not fully human. And he made the claim. He said, look, you can train a monkey and a dog, but you can't educate a monkey or a dog.
Right.
And he said, the truth is there's only a small percentage of human beings that can be educated.
Yeah.
You can train them all, but you can't. And he said, look, I taught at the Ivy League school, and most of those kids, those elite American kids at the Ivy League, couldn't be educated.
Yeah.
It was just not possible.
Right.
So it really is, it's all, and the thing is, and it's, this is the problem with society, is even the elite are mostly stupid because they know that they have the advantages of education and these advanced ideas, but then you look at how they use their advanced ideas.
Yeah.
And it's clear they don't understand the ideas that they've learned. They're not really
not
educated.
Very much, yeah.
They're
yeah.
monkeys with big words.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's a little bit dehumanizing.
They're posers. Is that the right word? Yeah,
and,
posers.
And, yeah. And so civilization is the achievement of the few.
Yes,
no question.
Yes.
Right? And so most people, they've inherited it. They've gotten all this civilization, all these advanced things, and they've sort of They've been trained into it, and they kind of know it, but always while there was respect for really higher intelligence, for people who really, when there was respect for this.
Yeah.
And by the way, that was always on the edge, because it's like, look at how many people they rejected.
Yeah.
You know, Schopenhauer wasn't recognized until he was an old man.
Yeah, sure.
As the most brilliant mind in Europe at the time.
Yeah. It takes a long time, Jeff. It takes a while.
And to this day, nobody really, most people don't understand what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that's really deep,
profound, it's going to be
and
difficult.
Profound.
Yeah.
And so it, very few people understand. And so the problem becomes, and here's what's happened now, is that we have these shortcuts, simplifications. Conspiracy theory is one.
Mm-hmm.
Political ideology is another, whether it's Democrat, Republican, Communist, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
All of these, you look at the libertarians. They've got the simplified, they read von Mises, and they don't even understand it, really.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's kind of a bit complicated. So they couldn't criticize anything. They're true believers. They believe X, Y, and Z. These people will destroy civilization because once you adopt a rigid ideological view, you're no longer open to any truth.
Mm-hmm.
And everything depends on the truth,
mm-hmm.
right?
A dogma.
You have to have the
mm-hmm.
truth. And once you start falsifying reality, mm-hmm. to make it conform to your preconceptions or your ideology, you are on the path to unraveling everything.
Mm-hmm.
And unless something comes along and knocks you off of that
mm-hmm.
and sort of renews you and allows the truth or better ideas to emerge, you're on the downward path.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we should do a series of interviews, and we're going to go on here today, but let's discuss current events.
Okay.
And also, just give us, in your opinion, and I'm going to offer my thoughts too, as to why we are in this situation. You know, give the historical context.
Well, in the simple, given what we just, in the context of what we just discussed, there's a saying, it's an English saying, what goes up must come down.
Yeah, okay.
That is, because of the human nature is limitations to it. Can only jump so high and go so far, and as far as human civilization will reach an upper limit to where it's kind of our civilization went kind of above what we are really up to maintaining.
Yeah.
And so in a general sense, what goes up must come down. It's like you've thrown civilization, wow, look at, we went to the moon, we did all these things,
yeah.
we have this great literature and all these languages, and we have all this knowledge, and now we're not equal to it anymore.
That's right.
Especially since we have had dumbing down and socialism and egalitarianism
yeah.
has sort of turned against the idea of real human accomplishment and
achievement,
driving and achievement.
Yes,
right?
Yes, that's
and
right.
And so Jeff. Now we've become lazy and hedonistic, and we are no longer striving as we were, especially
right.
intellectually.
Right.
And so we are now reclining into the laziness of socialist ideology or maybe other ideologies.
Yeah.
And so we have we're not able to maintain it, and so it's beginning to crumble.
Mm-hmm.
And in a general, and we got this new religion that everybody sort of, oh yeah, well we got to have socialism. Everyone has to be equal, and we got to
right.
all have a group hug and. You know, this, and the problem is that's how you get a tyranny.
That's right.
Socialism ends up in tyranny.
It does.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's where we are. That's what's
okay.
happening in
yeah.
general, right? Big overview.
Now, I think that's absolutely correct. Now, is Mr. Putin realizing this, that we're in our declining phase? He must see that, right?
Well, Putin is a personification of decline coming out of Russia.
Okay.
He is, it's like, okay, you put, let's say you have some rotting crap that you throw in your garbage can and
mm-hmm.
it starts to rot.
Mm-hmm.
You get maggots in it, right?
Right.
Putin is sort of the maggot that's taking advantage of the rot.
Okay.
okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it's spontaneously appearing, yes.
He is a phenomenon. He's a gangster and a thug. He is the he comes from the underside of the KGB.
Mm-hmm.
He emerged through the period of what happened in the late 1980s is the Soviet Communist Party developed a plan. They had adopted it in 1960 to adopt fake democratic reforms and to fool the West into thinking they'd become a democracy.
I see.
And had adopted capitalism. So that they could get the technology and everything they needed to rebuild their system and come back and flip the balance of power and defeat us. That was their plan. That it was two defectors, one in particular, Anatoly Golitsyn, gave us the details of that plan in a book that he wrote in 1984 called New Lies for Old.
Right.
He predicted the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Jan Szena also said they're going to fake the collapse of the Warsaw Pact, but they're just going to go underground and they're going to fool everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what they did. Now, when they did that, and I've got it from sources from inside the former Soviet system,
mm-hmm.
they stumbled when they did this fake.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a period of confusion. They almost lost control of these reforms.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to retreat a little further than they wanted to, and they had to rebuild a little longer than, you know, to recast their position. It took them longer.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of taking them, you know, several years, it took them, you know, 20 years
mm-hmm.
to rebuild their position, or 25 years. But here they are.
Yeah.
And Putin was the guy. Putin was trusted
mm-hmm.
to do this,
mm-hmm.
to take charge of the government, to bring back the Soviet Union without the overt Soviet label,
mm-hmm.
which is what he did. And, you know, you read, you know, what is it, Masha Gessen's book, The Man Without a Face. You read Karen DeWish's book, The Putin's Kleptocracy.
Mm-hmm.
They really describe how the Communist Party went underground. They called
mm-hmm.
it a mafia, but it's really the people who ran it. The nomenklatura did not lose power.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Putin was the one tough guy who would take responsibility, who was willing to take
yes.
a bullet. I mean,
yeah.
he's not a coward.
No, no.
He is a strong man.
Right.
And he had the nerve when nobody did. And
right.
so he did it. And,
okay.
you know, he's sort of a special person to them. The KGB generals and the generals of the army said he is our golden man.
Yeah.
We have
They appreciated
man.
His steadfast devotion.
Obviously. Because he's going
to
bring back the Union. And this invasion of Ukraine was always in the cards because the plan was always to put the Soviet Union back together.
Right, right.
And by the way, their alliance with China, Communist China, was always in the cards.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Putin's foreign policy, he is building military infrastructure in Communist Nicaragua. He is giving massive support to Communist Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
He's got anti-aircraft troops in Venezuela. He is supplying Angola, Congo, South Africa,
mm-hmm.
right, with weapons. He's got military advisors in North Korea. He's allied with Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
He is allied with China.
Now,
he is not allied with anybody that's not part of this communist bloc.
Right.
Except the Iranians, but all the Iranian mullahs were educated, the top Iranian mullahs were educated at Moscow State University and are probably KGB agents.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. So the revival of the Cold War structure, basically.
It never ended, but there you could say not revival, reconfiguration. Stalin's favorite word was perestroika, which means
yeah.
reformation.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So now,
reformatting
doesn't,
it.
Doesn't Vladimir Putin understand how disabled and dysfunctional and, you know, crappy that world was at its peak, its zenith? I mean,
no.
you know, kind of ridiculous,
no.
Jeff.
No, you're looking at it through your colored glasses.
Right, but...
Look, you think... I'll be the devil's advocate, and I'll talk like I'm Putin.
Okay, okay.
You think that a hedonistic shopping mall way of life, this bourgeois way of life, this
right.
easy life,
okay.
is the way we're meant to live, and that is what prevails on the earth.
All
and
right.
Putin would say... No, you're weak. You're weak because you won't give up your way of life to fight. You're not a fighter.
Yeah.
And then he will point to history and he'll say, look, you had Athens, the wealthy democracy,
right.
fighting Sparta. Spartans didn't even use gold and silver coins. They were so poor.
Yeah.
The Spartans did not have an economy worth a darn.
You're right.
But in
right.
the Peloponnesian War, who defeated who?
Yeah.
The Spartans beat the wealthy Athenians.
Right.
And then he'll go on and he'll talk about the Carthaginians and their wealthy commercial empire and the Romans. The Romans were just a bunch of farmers. And they go up against the Carthaginians. They didn't even have a navy when the First Punic War started. But who ended up destroying who?
Mm-hmm.
The Carthaginians were destroyed. Carthage was plowed under. They planted salt in the earth. The Romans defeated them. The Roman, the farmers defeated the merchants,
mm-hmm.
the middle class people.
Mm-hmm.
And so Putin says, and then the Romans got rich. And the Romans became commercial empire.
Mm-hmm.
And then who defeated them? The barbarians. Well, how much money did the barbarians have?
So, not much.
So Putin is going to tell you, he's going to say, no, you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
It is like Machiavelli said,
mm-hmm.
that gold is not the sinews of war. Gold does not find good soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
The good soldiers will always find the gold.
Yeah.
So that's Putin's point of view. And
okay.
by the way, Mao Zedong had a different way of putting it. Mao Zedong said, power, political power comes from the barrel of the gun.
Yes.
And
yes.
he talks about the yin and way, right? You got Eudocio Rivinus, the Peruvian Marxist, wrote a book about it. He he recast some of Mao's lectures from 1934, and he said, the Yin and Wei is the right path, right as in right wing. And Mao said, look, we're going to pretend to be right wingers. And we're going to why sew up the pockets of the capitalists? Mm-hmm. Make them rich, mm-hmm. but have them give us the guns and the position. Mm-hmm. And then we'll turn around and say, all right, you want all the money and we want the guns. So you take the money, we'll get the guns and stick them up. We have all the money and all the guns. Mm-hmm. That's the Yin and way. That's how Mao took over China. Mm-hmm. So he helped the opium dealers and he helped the landlords and he helped the merchants and people in the Communist Party said, how can we be helping these right-wing people? He said, it's the Yin and way. Mm-hmm. It's the right strategy. But then once we finish the right strategy, we'll turn left and we'll expropriate them all and put them against the wall. And that's what Mao did. And then Mao recast it again for Deng Xiaoping. We'll do that on a grander scale to the Americans. Mm-hmm. Right? You have all the money, you Americans, and we'll have all the factories that make all the guns. Mm-hmm. And now you won't be able to make any weapons because all the industry in the world is concentrated in China. Now we can make all the artillery and the missiles and the guns and the ships. And that's now right. You don't have the wherewithal to build your own navy back
anymore.
No,
we can't. We can't, yeah.
Right. So that's in essence the yin and way. It's the same thing as Putin. It's the same thing as I described, mm-hmm. What Machiavelli said. And well, Machiavelli, it was a very, everybody said, wait a minute, gold is the sinews of war. Everybody knows that. No.
Yeah.
Now you see, it's a different way of looking at it, and of course, they have their point. There mm-hmm. are instances in history where they do prevail, and we need to admit that.
Yeah, no, very good. Now, which way of life do you prefer, Jeff?
Well, look, if I wanted to be an evil dictator, of course, I would prefer their way of life. If I'm going to be part of the ruling oligarchy, that would be magnificent, right? Mm. But if I want a better life for all people, regardless of class, whereas right. John F. Kennedy said, a rising tide lifts all boats, this is capitalism, right. This is the market economy,
right.
That is better for humanity in general.
Yes, it is.
With this following caveat. The caveat is that if your society does not, the great Jacob Burckhardt, the Swiss cultural historian, said there are three elements to civilization, mm-hmm. church, state, and culture. Culture is the money power. Culture is all those things that make the market and make scientific discovery and knowledge and culture. And then you have the state, which defends society, and the church that spiritualizes society. And he said you have to have a balance between those things. If the market suddenly becomes the be-all and end-all, mm-hmm. to where the state just becomes an adjunct to the market to facilitate the market, which is what's happened here, by the way, mm-hmm. and then it's, the church becomes the Jesus business, it's all about collecting money from the folks, mm-hmm. and they're no longer authentically spiritual.
No, yes.
Then you have a problem. That balance has been lost, and now you have the shopping mall regime where hedonism has become a disease mm-hmm. in which the society can no longer defend itself because now the defense contractors are just enriching themselves and making weapons that don't work, mm-hmm. and your spirituality is hollow, mm-hmm. so nobody's honest or true, and everybody's ready to betray their country for money. Mm-hmm. And I think we may have actually gone into this imbalance, and that may be where we are right now.
Yeah, we are there, yeah.
Yeah. So the market is good. You need the market, but you need this greater balance where it isn't the market isn't the be all and end all. Man does not live by bread alone, as somebody famous once said, right?
Yeah. Well, the Romans built themselves up to a formidable state, I mean, they were really doing well. No one could really challenge them, as far as I understand.
For hundreds of years.
Yeah, for hundreds of years. In fact, most of these legions, they call them, the armies, Roman armies would set out to go find out who they could conquer. I was told by a historian that most of the time, the natives, call them natives, or, the people outside the Roman Empire that were thinking, the Romans were thinking of subjugating, they ran like hell as soon as they saw the legions come. Yeah, ran like hell, because they were so scared. And the Romans had this incredible mastery, though, Jeff.
Actually, the history of the Roman Empire is really, I don't know who said that. The Roman Empire expanded very slowly over a long period of time.
It did, yes.
And it started under the Republic. It really became an empire under the Republic.
Yeah.
And they basically turned Italy into a confederation.
Yeah. Okay.
That they were the directors of this Italian confederation.
Yeah.
And that confederation ran into Carthage and defeated them. Mm-hmm. Then it ran into Antiochus the Great mm-hmm. in Asia Minor and defeated him. And ended up being the liberators of Greece. But then the Greeks were too decadent to defend themselves, and they just sort of became Roman clients. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Spain fell to Rome because it had been the Carthaginians had tried to use it as a weapon against Rome. Mm-hmm. And even Spain rebelled against Rome, and they crushed it. And they went on from there. Julius Caesar conquered Egypt by making Cleopatra his mistress. So you have and there was a civil war in Egypt then. She was fighting her brother, but it is a bunch of wars, and by the way, very desperate wars that it was not clear. And of course, the conquest of Gaul, which is now modern France, mm-hmm. Julius Caesar's 68,000 men, his 10 legions. Mm-hmm. Basically faced, at the Battle of Alesia, trapped, 70,000, 80,000 Gauls trapped in Alesia with 100,000, or was it 200,000, coming at him from the outside. Mm. So he's defending a tactical donut. And he just barely survived that. But he conquered Gaul.
Okay.
He cut off the right hand of every single Gaul so that they couldn't fight against Rome again. Gaul was pacified for more than 100 years. Mm. They conquered. And it was bloody. Yeah. And it was really pretty horrific. His first invasion of Britain, he was repelled. That was not easy either. The Britons were very fierce fighters. In Germany, they conquered Germany briefly. 9 years later, the Romans were driven out of Germany, mm-hmm. never to conquer it again. Mm-hmm. So, that was Varus's leader.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So it's a very long, bloody...
Yeah.
history with desperate battles all throughout.
Okay, now I want to mention that grant you that's all correct. I think it's great. Now, what I think is really interesting is that you go out and you kind of subjugate people and you teach these people that don't know much of anything. You show them how to participate in trade and commerce, and you show them how to build roads, and they do it. For example, I'll never forget looking at some of these Roman aqueducts. I was in Syria in Palmyra, and I've been all over the place. In fact, I looking at the Pantheon in Rome and then reading about it and saying, holy shit, Tom, how did they build that? So they had exquisite skill, unbelievable skill. In fact, Roman concrete was really close in quality to what we have Portland cement.
It's actually superior. By the way, Roman concrete is superior to anything we have today. We don't exactly know the formula.
Yeah, we don't know.
We figured out at some point they were using salt water, seawater, as part of the formula, but there's still something in it. It's stronger than our modern concrete.
Yes,
we don't
it is.
Quite
Probably
know
is.
How it...
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know how they did it.
Yeah. Yeah, so they achieved extraordinary things, and it's because they did not I'm going to say it really, really kind of bluntly, and it's going to sound crude, they didn't take any shit. They didn't put up with any shit, they didn't put up
with
any garbage.
Remember, the Romans were the sons of Mars.
Yeah.
And if you revolted against the Romans and you would not surrender, they would take a couple legions and they would go shoulder to shoulder through the city and kill every man, woman, and children.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Yes.
Yeah.
I heard. I don't know if it's true, but the first erection of the Pantheon, the construction of the Pantheon, was delicate operation, and they didn't really know they could pull it off. But I was told that the architects or the main designers, the contractors, the engineers, whatever. They were told, I think, I can't remember the emperor at the time, Agrippa maybe, I can't remember. Apparently, if they failed, they would be executed. So, Jeff, if you don't have that kind of fear, You know, how can we achieve anything? For example, we went to the moon. I'm 63. I think you're about the same age. Is that correct? You there?
Yeah, I'm 63. So we are the same age.
When we were youngsters, I watched it on television. You know, NASA launched these guys into orbit, and then they went out on their way to the moon. And I think it's true that there was a consensus at NASA. There was a 50-50 chance they would come back alive. Right?
Oh, yeah. Nobody's ever done it before, and it was a pretty crazy thing. 50-50
chance. And the computer was this really, really, really primitive thing.
They'd have computers as big as several buildings that weren't as good as what you've got on your desktop.
Yeah,
right now.
It wasn't digital. I think it was analog, but they pulled it off. And like you said, we couldn't do that today, probably. We're not going to do that. We're decadent. We're hedonistic. We're a bunch of losers.
I mean, you don't have the engine. Look, the people, in order to achieve intellectually, to make the atomic bomb, to actually, the trouble we're having in putting together, for example, we abandoned our nuclear weapons industry.
Yeah.
So we disassembled it. We're trying to put it back together again, but the problem is they're not able to find engineers and scientists.
That's
and
right.
People that have the skills. Because when that generation retired, the schools didn't create people with the same set of skills.
Right. We don't.
Now, the Chinese
we don't
and the
have competency
are.
Anymore, Jeff. Competency
right.
is gone. I mean, you and I are 63, so we know what it was like in the 70s. You remember, right? Right? It was competency.
Well, I had to study in school. I couldn't get through school without studying.
Right.
Now the kids, they don't study and they get through school and they pass. Some
right.
of them get A's without studying.
Almost everybody I meet is incompetent.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of incompetence, yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, people don't realize intellectual competence is rare even to begin with a lot of education.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our civilization and all of the things we take for granted come from that.
Mm-hmm.
And when that falls below a certain level, the power just doesn't come on anymore,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize, you know, all these people sitting around, this is what happens with hedonism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cicero wrote in Ad Herennium, this is, you know, more than 2,000 years ago, he examines, you know, Epicureanism and hedonism and Stoicism, and he said basically, you know, Epicureanism is hedonism in
mm-hmm.
essence.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to disintegrate and you're going to lose everything. You can't, you have to have some kind of stoicism,
mm-hmm.
some kind of, you know, in which you believe in something higher
mm-hmm.
and that you develop your will that you are going to suffer and accept suffering
mm-hmm.
as for something higher.
Well, isn't it called hard work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
You have to, you know, learning.
Delay gratification and work hard, right?
Well, I'm telling you, you know, we're going through ancient history and we're going through some areas of philosophy and sociology.
Yeah, it's good.
I had to read those books, by the way, when you read Roman history, if you read Tacitus, I had a friend that I tried to introduce it to, and he says, it's too boring, it's too dry, I can't get through it.
Yeah.
Well, yes, it's dry, you have to concentrate.
Right.
This stuff isn't candy.
Yeah.
Right? This isn't Netflix.
Yeah.
But if you know, and the thing is that, and you say, well, why do I have to know this? What's the value in it? I'll tell you. And this may surprise many people, but when you own that, when you have that, you have a depth of understanding of human nature and history that you can't get anywhere else. I'm
mm-hmm.
sorry, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the classic ancient Greek and Roman literature was the basis of education for hundreds mm-hmm. of years.
Sure.
Because it carried that. And you say, well, what is it? Well, I can just try to describe it to you, but you won't understand. And the first thing I'll tell you is that when I first started reading, you know, I decided after I got done with college that I didn't know anything. So I started with Herodotus, and I started to read through the Greeks and the Romans. And the first thing I felt was terribly depressed
mm-hmm.
because all of my modern notions of human nature and government and man were wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I could see quite clearly that human beings are pretty nasty,
mm-hmm.
and they do pretty awful things,
yeah.
and it's pretty regular, and it's pretty, and so
yeah. Yeah.
my ideas weren't of how to behave and what to do weren't realistic. Mm-hmm. Weren't realistic in my appreciation of human beings.
Sure.
And that was really difficult for me.
Yeah. How old were you when you came to this conclusion?
Oh, 23.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. So and I thought, how many things that I got from my coming up in this modern liberal,
yeah,
you know, almost utopian, you know, yeah, idealism of our society, how totally wrong it was.
Yeah.
Because it's not rooted in reality.
No.
The realities of human life,
yeah,
and history. And what you see, we have our own vicarious experiences limited.
Yeah.
And we get this indoctrination with when we're kids, and then we become immunized from our own experience. We don't learn anything because we already know everything from our education. Well, it's really indoctrination. It's not education.
Mm. Yeah,
but if you read the ancient Romans and Greeks, they had this objectivity.
Mm.
Right, you read Plutarch's Lives about the noble Greeks and Romans, and this is what a modern American would go, there's nothing noble about these people, they're all evil.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, from your point of view, but when you see what their nobility is,
mm-hmm,
and you see what human nature is, you begin to understand and appreciate something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that is a more mature moral understanding comes,
mm-hmm,
from it,
mm-hmm,
as well as political understanding.
Well, with pain and suffering comes strength, typically, right?
Right.
And I think, you know, when you become prosperous, there's an expression with prosperity and wealth comes failure, right?
Well, comes softness, right?
Right.
Softness.
Yeah. So
and softness is, oh, I can't do that. That's too hard. Mr. Nyquist, I don't want to write an essay for class. That's
right.
Too hard.
Right. Well, right. For example, I'll give you a personal example. I had this, we have this wonderful house here that we bought on the Pacific Ocean in 1999, and we bought it for $329,000. So it was pretty cheap, but it was cheap for a reason. Well, it was fundamentally and structurally flawed, right? Built, mm-hmm, by criminals. The Sonoma County chief of the building permit, whatever, Ben Newman told me, Mr. Pachauri, this house was built by criminals, and we couldn't do anything about it. Okay. Then the HOA, yeah, he said that. Okay. Yeah, you're laughing, but okay, and the HOA did its best to ensure that the homes were built not for the marine environment, but, you know, shabbily, so that the contractors would come in and have a nice healthy income rebuilding them or repairing them, right? And I discovered this. So then it comes time to, you know, realize that, holy shit, this house is falling down, Jeff, right? It's falling down. And I've got two kids, and this is like around 2007, 2008. And I said to my wife, okay, we've got to do something about this. But I knew that if I hired somebody, it would cost the value of the house, right? So it was pretty bad. And then I said, okay, 2014 rolls around. My son is 14 at the time, and I'm thinking, okay, Tom, you're going to rebuild this sucker, right? And now I had never rebuilt, done this kind of thing, although, I'm sort of like an engineer. I could build a nuclear reactor if I had to. So I elected to do it with my son, and we did it. And we did a formidable job, you know, for the marine environment. We wrote the rules of the HOA and Sonoma County. Everybody was super impressed. They all tried to stop us when we were doing it. And then at the end, you know, they said, how the hell did you do that? And I felt like saying, you know what? I'm not a pansy or a pussy like you. You know, I like hard work. I like stressing myself. I like challenge. I like it. You know, you don't like it. You run away from challenge. You're just a fucking pussy. And they looked at me and said, you know, and now it's pretty obvious who prevails. Those who really set out to tackle the challenge. Okay, it was difficult, but I did it. No problem. It's a piece of cake.
Well,
how about that story?
The thing is, well, of course, it's, you know, grit is what really matters.
Yeah, grit.
Tenacity is, look, the Romans had tenacity.
Yeah.
Tenacity was, I think John Fuller, the great military historian. said the great mystery of Rome's conquest with their medium infantry, the legion, they had horrible cavalry, mm-hmm. which was the key to flanking. All warfare is basically based on flanking. How could they have prevailed? Mm-hmm. You know, Hannibal, who understood their weakness, almost destroyed them. But they still, it didn't matter. They always managed, because of their desire mm-hmm. to prevail. They worked through their weakness.
That's right.
And they, despite that, the Romans won over the world because they had grit. In the end, that's what it was.
Yeah.
You have Polybius, in Polybius's famous Rise of the Roman Empire, his History of Rome. But we don't have the whole thing because a lot of it was lost. But Polybius was a Greek who had come into the service of the Scipionic Circle. He was sort of a mentor of Scipio Africanus the Younger, the destroyer of Carthage. And he wrote about the Roman nature, and he said, we Greeks could not maintain ourselves, because if you had 100 talents to support the biggest army in the world, they would all be embezzled. Because we don't believe in the gods anymore, mm-hmm. and we're no longer honest.
Right.
The Romans, they honor their, they believe in the gods, and they honor their word.
Yes.
So every penny is accounted for by a Roman general, and everybody is paid, and nobody is cheated.
Right.
And so he said the Romans were religious, and they were honest,
yeah. yes.
and they had grit, and they worked hard.
That's right.
But the Greeks were all, and then he, in a later chapter, he says, and suddenly there was a dearth of children in Greece. Mm-hmm. That's a literal line from his book. People just started living for themselves and stopping having children. So Greece became depopulated in the
right.
second century B.C.
Right. That's what
and
we're
this
doing.
This was the end of them. Yeah. In fact, Gustav Le Bon, in one of his books, said that the modern Greeks aren't even descendants of the ancient Greeks for the most part.
No, they're not.
Because the ancient Greeks died out.
Of course. Mostly Turkic Greeks. Jeff, we're going to do a part three. So I'm going to turn it off again. And I'm going to call you back. Just give me a couple
okay.
of minutes. Yeah.
All righty.